Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
This is module 17, and we're looking at the sixth realm. So we've been going through, just for really catch up to get on the same page, we've been following through the whole kit and caboodle of nature of mind. And the thing is that we already covered the skandhas, right? And then we talked about, the nidanas, the 12 nidanas, the links of causation, which endlessly circle until we find ways to snip the connection. And now we're going to go into the, and those were all designated by various points on the wheel of life. At this point, we're going to go into what's called the six realms. And the six realms in this case are going to be designated by these elements that are going around, but you're not to read them in clockwise fashion in this particular case. What we call the God realm sitting up here. And then the blends kind of into the Asura realm, which is right in that sequence.
Jealous God.
Jealous, I'll explain all that. Human realm is there. Then we go to animal realm. And then we go to Prater realm. And then we go to the hell realm. So don't ask me why.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not a problem. Just enjoy it. We'll come up when you have time and have a look. And
enjoy every realm.
So let's see. I don't know. Did everybody or anybody have a chance to look at the reading material that was on the website? That was taken out of the cutting through, discussing the dimensions of circularity that go on, as we talked about. Not only do we have the circularity of the nidanas and the simultaneity of the skandhas, which are all happening together, we also have the six realms, which are also spinning on this wheel. But so you'll understand, and it's really important to have the big perspective, because you will be encountering different descriptions of the six realms in various literatures. And Trungpa Rinpoche's introduction was much more up-to-date or contemporary, applicable more to, rather than buying into a medieval or at least ancient system of explanation of a cosmos, okay? But to start with, realm. What is realm? Well, actually, the realm that we're talking about when we talk about the six realms is called the desire realm. And so the desire realm is basically inhabited by beings who basically incarnate. Because when you have a body, you have desire. I mean, you could, which came first, I don't know, but without desire, there's not much reason to have a body. Without a body, with a body, we find ourselves endlessly pursuing desire and being caught up with it, and that's going to be part of the deal. But desire realms, so we also have a few other realms, two more. And so it's important to just understand this on a conversational basis to get the bigger picture. And the reason why, I'll explain in a minute. We have what's called the form realm. So that's a realm where there are higher states of being. It's where you could say what we call spirits, and what we would generally in the West call spirits, you know, invisible dimensions, and the possibility of intelligence and spirit meet. It's often where we'll encounter something called pure realm, there's a huge literature on pure realms in Buddhism. So just that. But then on top of that is the other realm called the formless realm. And that is a little tricky, because sometimes when people talk about the God realm in this six realm business, they're actually also referring to people who go into the state of the formless realm, because it's extraordinarily exalted and very abstract. But it's like, if you were going to practice Theravada Buddhism, the kind that they practice in Southeast Asia, the first thing they do is discuss how to go into the four, what they call the four jhanas. And they're just basically states of the attempts to just understand or scratching the edge of the absolute. None of these realms are at all they're all in the realm of confusion. They're all in the realm of samsara. Because beyond this is the Buddha realm, as it were, the higher dimension, the most ultimate dimension and the most real dimension. Everything else is like a dream. We get caught up in this dream. And the reason why was because we think it's real. Now, if you read the Cutting Through, we had a previous chapter immediately before this talking about the skandhas. And in it, there was kind of a preface to going into this realm, the six realms, through the fifth skandha of consciousness. You remember the fifth skandha? And so that actually, he had a very interesting take about that, because he says, well, basically the problem with the fifth consciousness is it's so riddled with contradictions, even though it's constantly trying to keep all the, you know, plug all the, plugging the dikes and all this, and making sure there's a seamless quality or attempt to believe the seamlessness. Really, it doesn't work. And not only that, the more plug you fill up, the more claustrophobia you get. So at that point, you're looking for some way to escape from this claustrophobia. And at that point, you start spinning into these realms. Now, the realms that are described in traditional literature talk about you end up there as a result of karma. And they are normally called states of being, six states of being. And so they're kind of lifetimes. They are lifetimes. They're not just momentary. Whereas, in fact, as humans, and this is what Rinpoche took pains to point out, is we're going through these realms all the time. We can actually experience these realms. These are not only, because traditionally they say we're only in the human realm. You're never going to experience the god of the Asura realm. That's the jealous gods. Or you're never going to go to hell. Not in this lifetime. That's only afterwards. But Rinpoche said, no. And I think that as we see more and more how the world works, it's much easier to see its extremes. These days we live in extraordinary extremes. It's not some distant mythology. We're encountering this stuff where you see this unlimited wealth and unlimited depravity. You know, it's just so much in our face. And we're beginning to be able to understand more and more about the predicaments people we all find ourselves in, personally, momentarily, and then you find people who are really stuck for a long time in these places. If you wanted to find a more traditional approach, and I'll just mention this now, this just came out. It's a very extraordinary book. It's called A Guided Tour of Hell, and it's by my dear friend Sam Burkholz, who actually died on the operating table and went to hell, and he met a Buddha there and basically found that this Buddha guided him through hell. First, he thought he was just in hell as a deserved occupant. And then he found he's on a tour. But, you know, as he had to really get close to all these experiences. And so when he writes about this, it's very interesting. It's in the form of a graphic novel with all these extraordinary paintings and visuals. Oh, it's great. He teamed up with this Tonka painter who is also fascinated by graphic novels. And so it's kind of like a combination of these. It's a delight to read. And interestingly, it's not like what you would think. And for those of you who knew Sam Burkholz, a few of you who do, it's not like him at all. It's much more traditional. And it really does talk more about people ending up in places as a result of their karma in a particular life. We'll talk about that. But I think most important and relevant is to the fact that we really need to understand these are states of mind.
Yeah.
If we understand them as states of mind, we can pop out of them through our practice. We don't have to simply, we could endure them, I mean, in terms of, we need to understand what they are. But, you know, at the same time, we don't have to get stuck there. So, in the development of ego, that was that previous chapter, he said that basically, he talked about these skandhas, he talked about the whole thing as a series of layers of events that create experiences that are constantly misread and misinterpreted as an I. And this is where, by the time this whole fifth skandha really gets fully operative, we're hallucinating. The world we encounter as ego is a hallucination. It's all based on interpretation and projection. And, you know, a reinterpretation and continuous feedback, circular feedback about acceptance and rejecting, hope and fear, and avoiding pain and going after pleasure and being constantly disappointed. Mm-hmm. Because guess what? There's no way we're going to avoid it. It's really a hopeless situation from the point of view of understanding. It's all based on... it's hallucination, right? So when the universe treats us kindly, we get feedback and we actually get it. We actually suddenly get stripped bare and we discover we really are naked and we're really alone. And, you know, it's like at that point we have the opportunity to open up to that truth. And that really changes everything.
You mean when the universe treats us unkindly? Do you mean when it treats us kindly or unkindly?
Well, kindly.
It's all
kindly.
I call it kindness, but, you know,
oh,
some people would consider it horrific and a terrible visitation of fate. But actually, it's just what you do with it. It's not like in itself. People could be surrounded by wealth and comfort and go crazy and be terribly miserable.
Really?
So it's not like you don't equate so-called pleasurable experiences.
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
So we'll start off with just as he presented it, Rinpoche presented. And fundamentally, so in this process of being claustrophobic and worked up and fundamentally agonized, we start trying to fight our way out of it, and this is a form of aggression. So hell is the expression or the locale of utter aggression, solidified aggression. It is totally solid. And it's characterized by, there are different kinds of hells in the classical tradition. There are hot hells and there are cold hells. The hot hells are pretty much as they describe, with enormously exquisite tortures based on being lanced with, you know, poured into boiling oil and then dying but coming back. And you just continually, and then of course there's cold hells where you sort of freeze up and you're paralyzed and you experience this incredible searing pain.
Just the walk here.
From your own numbness. There's torture, there's regret, and there's guilt, and there's blame, but the blame never stops circulating around I. Yeah. And so that's the issue. You know, the problem with people in hell is that they really believe they exist, and it's all about me. You know,
that
and
sounds
so
familiar.
The first way to get out of hell is stop thinking about me. Stop viewing it all about me. It's not about me.
So, okay. Michael, when you say the blame is all about I, does that mean like it's my fault or everybody else?
It's everybody else, but I'm projecting. It's my projection. I'm not owning my projection.
Okay.
It's all those other people, other things. It's all, everybody else's
making
problem.
You
create your own hell.
Right. This is the issue. So we have these three poisons in Buddhism. I hope this doesn't... I don't want to get this too laced up, but or too complex, but we'll call this aggression of aggression. It's really aggression. Unmodified.
For hell. The hell
part. And so just a reminder, and this is a really interesting thing that came to me while I was studying this material. Our environment responds to our energy that we put out. Mm-hmm. So if we put out aggression, we're going to get it back, and the environment is going to solidify. And I had this person tell me a long time ago, it was a really remarkable statement, the universe is response to request. Which is actually very profound, I think. You know, everything that we get back, we're asking for. The universe is simply responding to what we're putting out. And so if we are aggressive, then we're going to get aggression back. The world is going to become dark, frightening, and violent. And then it will simply replicate itself over and over and over again. So then we get to that's pretty dark. So and it's also not permanent, but we have to wear it out. We have to. If you're in a hell realm as a result of a rebirth, then you really just have to endure the cycle enough to where the karma itself wears out, which could only be in our time 5 minutes, but for a person in that dimension it could last for 2 million years, because it's just the pain is so endless and so ongoing. So the Preta realm is the next one. That's called Hungry Ghost Realm. That's this one. And so there's a lot of different ways of describing this. It's often traditionally described as somebody, a being who has this enormous mouth and a very tiny throat and a huge stomach. And they're constantly grasping and trying to, and they're constantly salivating for food or drink. And if they get water, it actually burns them. It doesn't go down their gullet properly. They have these long gullets, and they're an exquisite torture. I mean, there's this whole kind of thing. Well, you know, okay, we can say that, but how about relating this to our experience so we can understand how people can get into these places? Think about just utter grasping, about for grasping for the unattainable.
It's called prayer realm?
Preta. P-R-E-T-A. Preta. P-R-E-T-A. Yeah. It means hungry ghost. So, basically, we say hungry ghosts are beings that can't let go of, they're kind of like spirits that are discarnate who, let's say they left the body and they can't let go of their attachments to prior experiences and a world that they completely cling to, so they get reborn in this circle of, it's the traditional ghost realm also, where these ghosts are, you know, howling, you know, banshees and all this kind of thing. I mean, it's all about being miserable, right? They are miserable. They're always looking for, and so we can understand this in certain ways when we start to begin to actually notice that we're actually asking all the time for something that can't be. The desire for the unattainable. How about that one? That's a very interesting aspect of this kind of prayer realm. It's a milder form, but it's fundamental because a lot of people are just driven by this kind of stuff. Fantasies for satisfaction and continuous disappointment. We never can get satisfied. We always want more, and we get less.
That sounds like hell to me.
No, it's a milder form. Hell is much worse. Hell
is
just
pure. You could be in both places at the same time, can't you? Certainly, you could be in both of those places at the same time.
Well, there are probably gradations, like there are kind of like boundary points or border crossings where they're pretty close. So that could be. People could be really driven crazy by that, and the hunger itself causes the pain. And it's as Rinpoche said, at the same time, the reason why people are stuck there, or beings are stuck there, is because they're endlessly fascinated by the hunger itself. Just the hunger for something, grasping the hunger for, you know, anything. You know, I mean, everyone knows what people are like when they're completely insufferably groping and. Women in particular are very familiar with this kind of thing.
Excuse me?
What?
Huh? Women?
Women are. Women have been bothered by people who grope.
You're really getting down to the literal meaning.
Clarify that.
Wow.
Okay. Good back. Very good.
I'm sorry.
You almost didn't make it out of here.
You're right. So then we're going to pull out our swords.
So then we go from there. This can go backwards and forward, but we're sort of ascending. We go into the animal realm. The animal realm is basically characterized by habit, plodding, and it's thick. It simply wants to rest and seek comfort, building a life around comfort and dullness, where, you know, everything is very dim. And basically what the dullness does is somehow it raises the pain threshold. So we're not, you know, the animal realm is always trying to make itself comfortable. It wants to eat, sleep, reproduce, forage, and just basically hang out, right? But, I mean, it's not interested in questioning. I mean, now, I don't mean to discourage animals, by the way. This is a state of mind. This is not... animals are lovely, they're absolutely magnificent. And they also are emanations of intelligence. So there's another side to that. But I just did want to, this is how it's characterized in the sixth realm. We're then in the human realm. And the human realm is basically characterized by constantly busying ourselves. We're characterized by passion and, of course, desire for comfort and, but not to the extent of the animal realm. That's not all we want. But you can sort of see when people, all they do is build their life around comfort, they're heading for an animal realm. they're moving towards that dimension of either rebirth or certainly at least dwelling. And so we have greater hopes and fears. We have big hopes, small hopes, petty hopes, grand hopes. And we also have a lot more kinds of intelligence that can be employed, for better or for worse. The most important thing about the human realm is, as you may have heard, when we introduced the four thoughts that change the mind, we went through that, didn't we? The four reminders?
We didn't really.
Precious
talk
human
about
birth?
That. No.
Okay. There is, I'll just use this term. It's a very interesting phrase. A precious human birth, free and well favored. We, of all the realms, the human realm is the best of all possibilities for us because it's the only one that we understand can actually allow us to question and actually explore the foundations of our own confusion. And so it's considered free and well-favored when we are born in a place where and time where we are able to do this. We have enough leisure or enough space, food, shelter, and clothing to actually be able to ask ourselves these questions of what we're doing here and who are we. And we can actually learn about ourselves. So it's exceptional from that point of view. And of course, hearing the Dharma is exceptional because we can actually learn about these teachings. That's
You can. It's the only realm in which you can become enlightened.
It's the only realm in which you can. Well, they actually say it's possible to attain enlightenment in other realms, but you know, you really have to be. It's already going to be hard work in this realm, but it's really going to be hard work in these other realms.
We were talking about this earlier.
She came to my house
because we had this several years ago.
Yeah,
and I sort of remembered there was an escape hatch there. I couldn't remember exactly.
Yeah, so that's the human. It goes. Actually, it's about going into the human realm, right? And so that little pathway
from the human realm.
That's where would that be in Waltham?
It's going up to.
You got to GPS it.
Yeah, that's it. Waltham. That's downtown.
With the big Buddha statue in the city hall.
It's at the Prue.
So we'll move on for a moment. Humans, and there, you'll find that this next realm, which is called the Asura realm or the jealous god realm, is has got a very traditional description, but also you can begin to relate to it in terms of seeing mentalities that are afoot, particularly in this era of time. And it's basically, Asuras are jealous gods. So what are they jealous about? Well, they can see the god realm and they want it. And they work very hard. They think that the god realm is going to, they're going to get it by working really hard and outsmarting everybody.
Oh, gosh.
And fighting and attacking and taking over the god realm. Well, if you read the Bhagavad Gita, you realize it never works. They always are on the storming heaven and trying to get at the gates and trying to break in and take over. And endlessly turn back and collapse and constantly meeting failure. But it relates to this notion of it's kind of a passion of aggression. It is aggressive, and so it's related to the hell realm in that sense. Strife, struggle, one-upmanship, always trying to step over anybody in order to get to a higher position. Extraordinarily high focus of achievement, but endless dissatisfaction, restlessness, anxiety, always to be on top. And the struggle for territoriality. So now we can begin to see how there are a lot of human people who are into this dimension, right? We see how this infects us all the time. And so instead of accepting the possibilities of human, which actually are very open-ended, and leaving when we leave that behind in order to go on one of these great campaigns to achieve ultimate divinity or immortality or any of these other things, it's all just our own projections. But you know, they do. I mean, these people may actually have a glimpse of the Deva realm. That's the god realm. And so that's characterized, whereas the human realm is passion and the Asura or jealous god realm is characterized by aggression because of all this fighting and struggle. And
jealousy.
And jealousy. The Deva realm is characterized by ignorance, And here, ignorance is bliss. So, you know, we use that term. It's very applicable. Ignorance is bliss. I mean, you know, when you're in the deva realm, you're utterly satisfied. Everything is working. Now, when they characterize it in terms of the traditional sense, devas are surrounded by enormous wealth, servants, and have everything at their disposal. You know, they have, I mean, it's like more like the kind of multi-billionaire kind of, you know, having your own private planet or at least, you know, country or huge estates, endless space that you can call yourself. But basically, it's ultimate self-hypnosis. And it's basically utter satisfaction. Well, it also, people can be in a god realm who are just tuned out. They're so just there, wherever they are, they don't pay any attention, they're not cognizant of anything else really going on around them. They're in a bubble, a very successful bubble. They're very happy being in their bubble. And, you know, they're not going to be bothered by issues that other people, that puncture other people's their own kind of sensitivity or peak, you know, themselves, because they just are capable of resting in this kind of, it's basically stupid. And that's what happens. They had to get to that realm by being smart, or extraordinarily good karma gets you reborn in a god realm. The problem is, you get stupid when you get there. Think about what happens to people who make oodles and oodles of money. Their mind changes. Or great power, their mind changes. People have talked about how they've known people who were in more modest positions before they came into great wealth or great power, and how they were much more accessible and human and responsive. And then they get on this level and they just tune out. You know, they're completely incapable of empathizing or open to other people's struggles or suffering. You know, I mean, you could go to parts of the East Coast, for instance, Long Island, for instance, and find all kinds of people couched up in very cozy places, and thank you, we don't want anybody else here but people who resemble ourselves, you know. I mean, this is just an example, but Deva realm is actually definitely with us, particularly when we have a lot of wealth going around. And
you don't have to go all the way to New York. I mean, you know, parts of Waltham,
west of
this realm isn't somewhere we go on vacation, right?
You're on vacation all the time. I mean, you just, you know, push a button and you're going to go. If you get tired of where you are, bingo, I'm in Paris. You know, let's go to Bangkok, or let's go to, yeah.
So passion, aggression, and ignorance are in each of the, except in the animal, you didn't associate that. I'm wondering if
animal is ignorance.
Ignorance, that's what I thought.
So animal is ignorance, preta is passion, and then hell is aggression.
Right.
Yeah, so they all share those three, one of the characterized by the three poisons.
Because in a way that, it's interesting, the parallels kind of between this animal and this god realm.
It is. Yeah. It is. Now, sometimes you'll read about these gods, and you actually, Sam has it in here. He uses when he talks about, he has a description of the six realms in the back of the book. And, you know, he starts talking about these foremost realms as being states that, because as he describes it, even when you're in these realms, if you really, really start to want to go further and further, or just get tired of only having everything you want, you really suddenly want to go beyond that, you know, but it's still ego. So instead of really understanding that what you're looking for is reality, you're looking for just more satisfaction. And so he describes that in terms of going into the formless realm. So I'll just mention it because you may read this also in very traditional descriptions. They talk about this. They mix those formless realm up in the deva realm of the six realms, of the desire realm. So basically, we're talking about to give you an idea of what these so-called higher aspects are, and they are higher aspects. Unless you get stuck in them, and then they're trapped.
So these are beyond the god realm there?
Yeah, but they do, you're going to read about people getting into that. Limitless space, unbounded consciousness, going beyond this and that, and absolutely nothing. In other words, what happens is people experience these things, and they really cling to them because they really are, they deliver, you know, great satisfaction. And then the next thing you do is you start hanging on to them. So you get stuck, and they're trapped. They are the beings who are in the formless realms are called gods because they have this state of, and they can be there for a long time. But the problem is because they are still subject to karma, meaning cause and effect, because they still have this notion of I, even if this I at this point is very subtle, it's still everything's revolving around this. They're going to have to come back and work through all of the subsequent consequences. Once that karma wears out and you can no longer hang on to it, the way it's talked about traditionally for god realms in this deva realm is these devas at a certain point suddenly start getting old because they've been eternally young forever and beautiful. And then they start finding these spots, age spots, you know, and they start to try to do something, brush it off, and then all of their friends, once they start seeing them, they start avoiding them, evading them. So they even get more panic stricken, and the more panic stricken, the more worked up they get, the more aggressive they get, and they go down the chute to the lower realm.
Okay. Is this one of the six realms, the formless god, or is that something else?
No, as I said, it's sometimes mixed when you read the description, okay. So I just wanted to familiarize yourself that they're actually talking. When you talk about that level of god, then you're talking about something called formless realm.
Okay.
it's just absorption, you know. So that's kind of the long and short of it. We can begin to see how we can start anywhere and circulate around these six realms. We can go from any one realm to another in terms of momentary kind of states of mind.
It seems like all of these are human realms. So this one realm called human, what's the translation for that? I mean, the original... Was it Pali, whatever the original word was?
The Sanskrit word?
Or Sanskrit.
I don't know.
Why is it
I don't really
human?
Know. I'm sorry.
Because they all seem to be aspects of human.
Well, we're talking to humans, so that's how we see it. You know, we're all humans talking to humans. So when we talk about, whether we even talk about rebirth as an animal or as a demon or as a ghost or as a jealous god or a god, it's all in the context of our own mind as humans. So we humanize or make things anthropomorphic or at least somehow relatable that way, right? If you read the traditional literature, you get dumb, you can just get reborn as a donkey or another animal. I mean, you know, and as an animal, you often are just simply subject to human consumption, or at least everything is involved in some kind of a dog-eat-dog or, you know, process of prey and victim because of the food chain. So you're somewhere on that food chain, you know, if you're an animal. That's the deal. And so they don't say you're going to just be born as a human with these animal characteristics. You are going to be born as an animal. They're definite about that. Rinpoche wanted us to understand these states of mind because we can encounter them and do. And we certainly can encounter them much more acutely and perhaps with some appreciation in our meditation practice because we're giving ourselves much more space to open up and actually witness this, kind of like let this thing actually become clarify for what it is. Our capacity to go anywhere, our capacity to create heaven or hell just like that.
So would you say, like, I was just thinking about ego in each of the realms. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that lack of understanding fundamentally about non-self and, you know, lack of solid me, mm-hmm. that pervades all those realms. And it strengthens that whole, I was just thinking of the hungry ghost realm and that craving. Mm-hmm. It's always getting something for myself. So,
or my projection,
or my
kind. I might be thinking about my family, for instance. I could be thinking about ensuring immortality through my family by investing my children and grandchildren with this kind of, you know, protection and investment with.
But it's all about
me,
like
still.
Yeah, me, all about me, yeah. And solidifying and holding. There's a holding pattern. Each one has a way of holding on to something.
Yes, grasping. We talk about fixation and grasping. So what we're talking about now is, interestingly, and then I'll go back to a moment here with this book of the Hell Realm, which the
Don't forget to leave time for questions.
Yeah, I'm going to. It's just that basically we encounter wisdom teachings, and when we encounter these wisdom teachings, we begin to realize it's possible for us to actually open up and experience the basic nature of wisdom mind, which is present right now. And as we do that, it has its own force. It has its own strength and power. We're not simply at the mercy of
okay,
anyone.
So I just have a question, because in all the years of studying this material, it goes right next to sort of a theistic approach. I mean, you could look at this in a theistic way. Like, if I'm a grasping person, then I'm going to be reborn as a... Or I'm thinking of the regent. If you act like a fucking bunny, you're going to be reborn a fucking bunny. But
whatever that means,
very straightforward. So it has a very theistic kind of going to hell quality.
Well, yeah,
you know?
there's a lot of Medea.
We have to talk about that.
The issue of cause and effect,
right?
That we can't anticipate when karma comes. We studied karma last summer with this wonderful book by Prahlad Rinpoche. And I highly recommend it. Anybody who wants to learn about karma, we can change, but karma requires a lot more than just point blank 1, 2, 3 cause and effect. We have to be reinforcing it, and it has to require certain conditions to ripen. So these dimensions that we're talking about, these 6 realms, are the conditions that allow that give rise to the ripening of those karmic acts. And so that's where we have to have that combination of things, not just, you know, bingo, I'm going to hell, but, I mean, in terms of the longer-term kind of visitation, where you're dwelling there, you're living there, because, you know, you've got the conditions now of reinforcement.
So what is the hope of an animal to ever get out of the animal realm?
Yeah, well,
what is the possibility of that?
Or, right.
There's a Buddha in each realm.
And so, you know, we know that there are certain animals do have certain intelligence, and, you know, Buddha is fundamental sanity, and so animals do have that Buddha nature. The question is, what is needed to activate or and actually allow it to come through? And I would say that from another perspective, everything, you know, as we go further, we begin to see everything as fundamentally pure, and you could even say divine, having divinity or sacred quality. So animals, too, are sacred, and the whole phenomenal world is sacred.
Yes.
But, you know,
give her a chance.
Yes, from the human perspective.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about.
I understand, but... We're also talking about the reality of animals being born as animals in the animal realm.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned that there's a sort of there's a Buddha for every realm. There's a sort of, it's a compassion of the Buddha to be there.
Well, it's also the actual nature of sentient beings. All sentient beings.
The question is, what's this Buddha?
How does the Buddha help?
In the hell realm, the Buddha is
the animal realm.
The animal realm would be fundamentally. That's an interesting question. I haven't given it much thought.
There you go. Well, it's helpful.
We could think about each realm and
how would you get out of it, and what good is the Buddha if you're going,
I'm just going to meditate and meditate and meditate so that I'm not going to be...
Well, we're always talking about...
Playing devil's advocate here.
It's okay.
Humans.
I think the Buddha in the animal realm is showing kindness to them.
Yes. Uh-huh. And animals do have natural kindness, and they often go beyond themselves. Where you, I don't know what right. you guys do, if you they go on social people. Media, they got all these movies about these miraculous things that happen about animals helping each other, just really totally incongruous kind of
yeah.
moments. So you realize there is a lot of goodness going on. But, you know, nature is very kind of like, it's pretty much more neutral than we would like. It's not just what we would like and what we think would be pleasant, but, you know, it can be extremely ruthless, too, when you think about lemmings, for instance, who multiply into these huge amounts, and then they all go into this collective suicide of jumping off these cliffs into the sea. I mean, this was one of these phenomena that were discussed a couple hundred years ago, how, you know, when things get out of whack or overwhelming, then nature goes through this balancing act. And I can tell you, it doesn't pick and choose. It's just like, it's wholesale.
I have a question, though. So part of me that thinks when people came up with this that they might have considered certain humans to be in the animal realm because they were so, like, particularly, I don't know history, but in India, I mean, if they had the caste system,
oh, yeah.
there were people who were.
They would consider those lower. But they would consider cows more sacred than Dalits. Cows are the big deal in India, whereas Dalit, which is the lowest, or there's so many different lower castes, but Dalit is the general term, that they could be considered more expendable than cows. You kill a cow, you could get killed for that. A Dalit, you know, killing an untouchable, no big deal.
We did this here in America. Let's just get that on the table with our history, slave history.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah,
okay. You know, so it is, we don't even have to go all the way.
I'd like other people in class to also participate.
Yeah, Jim.
So if you take all this in the perspective of this is all state of mind and all these realms, they exist mm-hmm. in us, some we're more predisposed to for whatever reasons, and they, you know, we change, sometimes we're in one realm, some we're in another, you know. So the question is, in terms of getting out or changing, do they recommend any antidotes?
Yes.
Or
the antidote.
If you're smart enough to figure out you're in the realm, they must have some prescription.
They do.
To get out.
They do.
Yeah.
So the prescription in general is the same for everyone.
The same for everyone.
Every one of these is basically if you can actually simply open up to letting go of the notion of a self. Now this is classical Buddhist theory, but. It's, you know, we have to talk specifically about our understanding as humans where we have these choices. Beings in hell have those choices as well. They just don't recognize those choices. They don't recognize because they are so self-involved that they are so solidly and completely self-involved. They can't see that actually, in the reality, it's just their own state of mind that's putting them into space. Okay?
More people have questions.
Like,
go ahead. Yeah.
So are you saying that all of these are just degrees of self-absorption?
Yes, confusion.
So starting with the most concrete, which is hell, and going around to the various degrees. So basically to get out of the realm is just letting a little bit less self-absorption might get you into the next realm.
Open space. The open space of awakened mind. And so that's why as humans we have this opportunity. This is considered a very precious opportunity, precious human birth, free and well-favored. When we actually encounter the possibility of understanding, we can pop out of this delusion. We can look and discover no self. We can discover identitylessness in our own being as the fundamental root of our mind. And as we do that, we start to encounter liberation. Liberation is a very interesting subject in itself.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jim.
So just to follow up on that, so are you saying that you just said exists always outside this?
What?
The emptiness and the pure space and...
The emptiness is everywhere.
It's inside that.
It's in this too. It's the whole thing is empty.
Everything's pervaded by emptiness.
Emptiness is everything. Form is emptiness. Emptiness also is form. Emptiness, yeah. So it's all empty. And as we practice, and we just, emptiness means openness, okay? It means equanimity. It means a sense of heart.
Compassion.
And we're realizing that this, our mind is here.
This, I guess, was more of a question: if you get out of this, where do you go?
You arrive here.
You're already here
because this is it. What's the most inconceivable thing? It's so simple. It's so in our face. We can't see it. It's right here and now.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's coming in right now. I was thinking the same thing, but you're saying that they're all, we bounce from one stage to another, and when you were describing them, I could relate to many of the things you were saying, but it makes a lot more sense that it's something that we all go through as humans, but the antidote is getting over yourself.
Get over yourself.
But what if you don't get over yourself? What if you don't see that opening? Does that mean that you stay or you go backwards? Or
if you don't open up,
then
you're going to be recycled. That's what it means.
I mean, to me, that feels a little victim-blaming in a way. You know, if somebody doesn't have the capacity...
There's no blame here.
Well, that's how it feels like to me. It just feels like it's kind of... if you can't do that, then you're not going to...
No, you can do it.
Well, but for whatever number of reasons, maybe someone can't do it. You know, maybe there's barriers in their mind.
No, but this is what we're talking about. What are the barriers? Why is it that people can't see what's right in front of them? We're not talking about blame. This is beyond blame. We're trying to understand. In fact, if we pull the blame out, then we can be much more... actually responsive and warm in terms of our share and compassionate about what we're looking at here. I'm not talking about this as some kind of cold formula saying, psh, you're out, you know, you don't get this.
Try not arguing her down.
Go ahead.
No, and I'm just being, this is again a little devil's advocate as well, it's just that I think that some people, there, at least to me, and I don't know if this is true, but there feels a little bit like a, for those people, it's kind of like got to pick yourself up by the bootstraps, or you're going to. If you can't do it,
this is not an exceptionalism kind of thing where you know you're either on top of the heap or forget it. We're not talking. We're not involved in any of that. We're involved in actually just learning about who we are and learning how. I mean, this is much. Frankly, I mean. Understanding the nature of ourselves is actually the key to being a lot more humble in truth. Because there's nobody to be...
I totally agree.
And so... I just don't know
if everybody has that, you know, capacity to do that.
But isn't that what the Buddha says that we do?
I mean, but there might be just in their life that they haven't had opportunities to maybe...
Maybe they haven't had it yet.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of the path is kind of, you know,
and it's both.
Chipping away to that.
I think it's both. I think you're right that there might be even some neurological wiring. Let's say somebody's born without a neurological capacity to do something.
Right.
Okay, so there could be an argument that their karma had them born in that situation, but there's still potential even with that limitation. So I think that what it's saying is you can at least work with some potential in there. There's always potential no matter what your situation is. So I don't think it's saying, because that almost sounds to me fatalistic, where I'm born in a certain situation, I can't do anything about it. And I think this perspective is, all you have to do is know where you are, and that's enough. Mm-hmm. You're not doing anything.
And understanding cause and effect.
Right. You're simply getting to know where you are. So it's the pulling up by the bootstraps. I don't see it as applying because there's no action here. It's just being aware.
I think you could ask why we're all here, you know, in this room together. And I think this is a fair question of asking what brought us here. Our interest, each of us can have very different ways of arriving here, but we're looking at these teachings together, we're trying to practice and explore these things together. This is part of our own karmic stream that is providing this opportunity to do this and explore this together. And so we have to respect each other. I respect other people who don't do this. It's not a question of this being the only name of the game, as it were. When we talk about, however, being human, we talk about a realm of possibility And then in that possibility, there is a possibility of enlightenment and liberation. We have that unique occasion as a human, which other beings, according to these teachings, do not. I mean, we don't hear about them attaining liberation in these other realms. This is the one that we have the opportunity to have. So, and it helps us also understand how important it is to be able to, you know, share our be open to other people who all of humanity, and recognize that every one of us has Buddha nature. And then, as a result, there's a lot more fundamental dignity you see in each other, and that we can actually treat each other with a much higher level of dignity.
Let's hear from Roberta.
Fine, sorry.
When I was volunteering with the homeless people, what Janet was saying, and Megan, you know, made sense, that they seem, you know, it seems totally hopeless. They're addicted to heroin, and they spend their lives, you know. Mm-hmm. So Michael has the book, In the Realm of the Hungry Ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems hopeless, but actually those people, a lot of them that I met are even very good at being in the moment, just being present in the moment, because that's all they have. I mean, if you're outside all day, every day, or just trying to find a place to be, if you haven't been kicked out of the library for falling asleep there too many times, you know, they're very alert in now. They're, you know, it's weird, because there's some way in which it's hopeless, and then there's some way in which they're very right on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we need to understand that's not really Dharma as such, as we understand it, because they're hopeless. They're alert because they have to be, like animals, have to be alert constantly, because they're going to be devoured by something bigger than
them. I don't think it's just
to
that.
I'm just saying that, you know, if the alertness is as much more of a survival issue on that level than only, you know, sort of having the capacity to really contemplate and understand. Because if there was, I mean, we have this power of mind that, you know, if we get more acquainted with it, it does allow us to overcome addiction.
It feels like, you know, it's certainly partly to do with just survival, but because of that, there's some awareness and appreciation for life that I can't describe or put my finger on. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's more awareness than just, I've got to be aware.
It's like giving a homeless person a pizza. They're starving. What do? They turn around and hand out pizza to other hungry people. They give more of what they have so little of than somebody who has so much more. I think it's worth giving some credit to the fact that, how is it that somebody who has nothing is prepared, once they get something, to share it with others?
Well, this is, I think, a human trait, frankly. I mean, they are human. Even though they have, you could say, when you're into an addictive mode, to that point, you are kind of thrown into that realm. But it doesn't mean that, you know, as a human being, you can't really have these wonderful capacities to share. And particularly people who are down and out tend to be more generous with what they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, they notice that poor people or people who are less well endowed give far more to various charities and support other things than wealthy people, who may make a big splash or something. But I mean, they actually do. They share much more of their resources. Mm-hmm. And so that I think that's a really praiseworthy characteristic, you could say. And anybody can have it. It doesn't only mean certain social classes have it.
Well, I don't think it's just praiseworthy. I think it's actually, and I think the point you were making is, it might even be a path for them.
Yeah.
So the question was, how do we get, if we have no bootstraps to pull up, mm-hmm. how do we get out of that situation? And what you're pointing out is, there's a possibility, there seems to be that there's a possibility when you're in that situation for certain traits to come alive.
They're forced to sit. It's like they're forced into a meditative mode, because there's no escaping their current situation. Mm-hmm. So they're just sitting with it, because there's no way out. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, people who, my nephew's been to jail. You know, you're stuck there. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of thought. Thank you. I think we should.
Well, I thought I made an attempt to share something. I'm not sure if I did a very good job, but I do appreciate everybody's participation. And these are areas where I think the important thing is we keep encountering them, and as we do and work with the teachings, we learn more about how they apply to our own experience. Mm-hmm. So again, it's important to understand these states of mind, and because they are states of mind, they are capable of being modified and freed from, as opposed to just states of, you know, being damned to having to live out some extraordinarily long source of punishment or something. But we also can understand that they are traps. They are where we get trapped. Each of these realms are point of where we get psychologically trapped into states of mind, and how we wreck ourselves in the process, how we make ourselves miserable and everybody else as a result. That's actually where this actually is very applicable. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.